Join Mark and Todd for Weapons Wednesday, where you'll learn how to use everything from your bare hands to your average AR-15.
The 12-gauge autoloader.
Sure.
The 45 long slide.
Yep.
With laser sighting.
You betcha.
The Uzi 9mm.
Yes, sir.
Phased plasma rifle in the 40-watt range.
What are you, crazy?
Wrong.
Okay. We'll talk about that, too. So whatever question you have about whatever weapon you have, call Mark and Don on Weapons Wednesday. And remember, your mind is your first best weapon.
Liberty's Guardian, guns and ammunition, a family-owned business located in the heart of Ohio's hunting country. Let us help you find the right shotgun or rifle for you. Or if you're looking for a pistol or concealed carry, we have a nice selection of compact and subcompact pistols for that too. Check out our website at www.libertiesguardian.com. That website again is www.libertiesguardian.com. Go to the website and check out our selection today.
We all need to prepare ourselves. You might have the food, water, gold, and silver, but ask yourself, are you truly prepared? That's why you need to visit MaineMilitary.com. MaineMilitary.com carries everything you need. Gas masks, fire starter kits, high-capacity magazines, chemical suits, military surplus items, and much more. Do you own a firearm? MaineMilitary.com has a large selection of pistols and rifles suited for your needs. Are your local stores sold out of ammunition? Call or visit them today for prices on hard-to-find ammo and bulk ammo orders. You don't need to worry about having a military surplus store in your area because MaineMilitary.com is the only store you'll ever need, all from the comfort of your computer. Visit them online today at MaineMilitary.com. That's Maine, like the state, Military.com.
From behind enemy lines and occupied territories, Liberty Street Radio is asking for your help. Keep hosts like Mark, Don, Spike, BC, Joe from the Carolinas, and Ed the AK-47 on the air by donating to LTR's end of the year bill. Many hands make for light work, so go to libertytreeradio.4mg.com to help keep LTR in this fight. That's libertytreeradio.4mg.com.
I had a dream the other night that, well, I didn't understand. A figure walked in through the mist with a flintlock in his hand. His clothes were torn and dirty as he stood there by my bed. He took off his three-cornered hat. And speaking low to me, he said, "We fought a revolution to secure our liberty. We wrote the Constitution as a shield from tyranny. For future generations, this legacy we gave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. The freedoms we secured for you, we hoped you'd always keep. But tyrants labored endlessly while your parents were asleep. Your freedom's gone, your courage lost, you're no more than a slave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. You buy permits to travel and permits to own a gun. Permits to start a business or to build a place for one. On land that you believe you own, you pay a yearly rent. Although you have no voice in saying how the money's spent. Your children must attend a school that doesn't educate. And your Christian values can't be taught. According to the state. You read about the current news in a regulated press, and you pay a tax you do not owe to please the IRS. Your money is no longer made of silver nor of gold. You trade your wealth for paper so your life can be controlled. You pay for crimes that make our nation turn from God in shame. You've taken Satan's number. You've traded in your name. You've given government control to those who do you harm so they could burn down churches and seize the family farm and keep our country deep in debt, put men of God in jail, harass your fellow countrymen while corrupted courts prevail. Your public servants don't uphold the solemn oaths they've sworn, and your daughters visit doctors so their children won't be born. Your leaders send artillery and guns to foreign shores, and send your sons to slaughter fighting other people's wars.
A worried man with a worried mind, have white skin, got assassin eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire sky. Well-dressed man, waiting on the last plane. Standing in the gallows, with my head in the noose. Any minute now, I'm expecting all hell to break loose. Crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Wrong town, should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool in here thinks he's got anything to prove. A lot of water under the bridge. Got other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen. I'm only passing through. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, my brain used to care, but things have changed. Walking 40 miles of bad road. The Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some days are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, my range. I used to care, but things have changed. I just don't show it. You can hurt someone, not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in late. I'm not that eager to make them stay. Some people are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, my, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. This mic down here in Arizona land, your mind is your primary weapon. Today is the 27th of August, 2018. It's Monday, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 7 minutes after 8 a.m. Arizona time. We're going to get back to our lesson today about the failures in the War of the Fleet. Magsaysay and the Hucks in the Philippines, the price of a British victory in Malaya, or why the communists lost in Greece. This is kind of where it comes down as to where, at the beginning, we discussed what insurgency was throughout the word, defined the word, gave you the origin of the word, pointed out that insurgency is a type and a method of warfare, and pointed out that it's a political, military upheaval, a movement, a people's movement, and certain principles of, and the components that make up an insurgency, and why some are successful and why some aren't. Now, in the past, we've covered quite a few of them, the IRA, the, oh, gee whiz, now I'm blanking here. That talked about the communists in Vietnam. Some of the fallacies of counterinsurgency. A guerrilla war is an extension of politics and cracks in the armor of the modern state. Political and military objectives creating the climate of collapse. Organization of the insurgent forces and the transition to civil war, and the alternate solutions, the Cuban example, a protracted war, and the popular force versus regular war, the guerrilla as missionaries, and Mao Zedong and the War of the Fleet, and the lessons in China, a colonial war, and the French experience, strategy and tactics of Vo Nguyen Giap, and how the Viet Minh won in Indochina. And then the political character of the Second Indochina War and the American role and expansion of the role of the wars of national liberation and the cost, the Irish Troubles and the role of the black and tans, terrorism, rebellion, and General Grievous on guerrilla war in Cyprus. So, as we know, this is quite an extensive study. It's not just come on for some interview and say, hey, here's this word insurgency and this is how it's done. I tip my hat to the host and say thanks. It's quite an in-depth study. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Thank you for Liberty Tree Radio for giving us this opportunity to help deprogram the listeners as we all know about problem, reaction, solution. Oftentimes, people can come on and talk about a news article, describe the problem, get a reaction from the listener, something must be done, and then they just move on to the next news article. And at the end of the broadcast, they just go, thanks for listening, we'll be back tomorrow for more problem, reaction, problem, reaction, problem, reaction. Very little solution. There are out there. I try to concentrate on the solution. Also, another concentration of this broadcast has to do with what's going on south of the border and not just in Mexico, Guatemala, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Brazil, Venezuela, Nicaragua. There's a lot of things that are going on, and for some reason, the news media is not really talking about that. Notice how they get everybody interested in things. Oh, look, the volcano's erupting in Hawaii. Oh, look, there's a hurricane bearing down on Hawaii. Oh, look, there's a big fire in California. And there's a lot of these other things that are going on, like the last leader of the Los Zetas went on trial in Waco, Texas, in federal court, was found guilty. et cetera, some of the things that we cover here on the broadcast. You wonder why certain things are, like last week there was 22 people arrested having to do with cartels from Mexico, and they were arrested and arraigned in federal court in California, and distribution of drugs anywhere from, I think that was Oregon, Arizona, some other place back east. But we can hear all about a hurricane or a fire in California. My email address is altabeeb762@hotmail.com, altabeeb762@hotmail.com. If you can also listen to Liberty Tree Radio at libertytreeradio.4mg.com. And if you have not away from a computer, you can listen on your telephone at 712-432-0900. Voice comes on, ask you for the room number, and that's 957-464 and the pound sign. If you'd like to be part of today's broadcast, you can *6 to unmute your phone. And as always, we send this broadcast out to Lily Grace Antoinette. Also, we broadcast on Thursday and Friday, starting at the same time, 8 a.m. Arizona time, on the Micro Effect, Thursday and Friday. But we're on for 2 hours. And since this is kind of a new audience, we've decided to kind of start at the beginning of about what insurgency is, what the definition of the word is, and how it's conducted, and the different components, and the type, and the method. I give my email address out. There's been some issues in the last month or so, and limited time and other things that I haven't been able to pay much attention to people that send me emails. I don't have a computer here. I have to go up to town to use a computer, so my time is rather limited. And so if you've sent me an email, it's not that I'm ignoring you. It's just that I got a lot of irons in the fire right now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Bob Miner, if you'd like to call and leave a message for him. The telephone is 701-251-2365, 701-251-2365. Voice will come on asking if you'd like to purchase phone cards or talk to the inmate personally, and then it'll ask you to enter in the first three digits of his last name, and that's M-I-N, translates to 646 on the telephone. And then the voice will come back in and say, you know, leave your name, address, contact information, and the name of the inmate that you're trying to get to, talk to, and leave your message after the tone. The beep comes on. You'll have about 7 to 10 seconds to say, hey, Bob, this is Mike in Arizona land. Thanks for... And we're all with you, we're all praying for you, et cetera, some words of encouragement. After the bottom of the hour break, I'll give you his telephone number, his mailing address, and the reasoning why. I'm not going to dwell on that because we have a very extremely limited amount of time on today's broadcast, being that it's only 1 hour. But being that it's past the bottom of the year, then Liberty Tree Radio has a fund drive to pay next year's bill. And if it's paid in full, it can shave about half of the bill off for the broadcast bandwidth, etc. So if you can, and don't give me the I can't, everybody can at least afford a dollar. Thousands of people out there that are listening. So if there's 10,000 people listening, then everybody would send a dollar starting in January. We wouldn't have to go through all this begathon and asking for people to contribute, but it always seems to be that there's 10 people that do the heavy lifting, and there's 90 people that want to do the freeloading. This broadcast isn't cheap. It's cost one person $300 a year to broadcast 1 hour a day, one day a week here, and I've asked for people to help, but haven't heard anything back. And I'll leave it at that, because I'm not going to turn this into a begathon. You know what your job is. My job is to be here on time, and it costs me quite a bit of money to make sure that I have the information to do these broadcasts and to try to keep you up to date of what's going on, and not to sit here and prattle on about some forest fire in California, some volcanic eruption, the distraction that's going on, while the things that are going on here in the United States. Oh, but it's just the border thing. Don't worry about it. Oh, really? Well, go tell that to Molly Tibbetts. She was in Iowa and got killed by an illegal alien. So if you want to bury your head in the sand and think that it'll not happen to you because you don't live in California or Arizona or New Mexico or Texas, just keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And with Mao, his analogy of the gorilla swimming like a fish in the sea of the population, and that's so often repeated because it contains an essential truth. Because it expresses accurately as well as picturesquely the fundamental principles of guerrilla war. I'm carrying the analogy a step further and ask, what happens when the fish is removed or removes himself from the water? The answer explains a better than a treatise, and the reason for the failure of a few guerrilla movements that have been successfully suppressed. The destruction in 1949 of the Greek communist guerrilla forces of the Democratic Army is a prime example. Malaya is another. And the Hukbalahap insurrection in the Philippines is perhaps a third. And all three show what happens when guerrillas are cut off or deliberately cut themselves off, as the Greek communists did, from the popular contact and the support of the Huk movement, which, like so many others, had its origin in World War II, offers more instruction to the counterinsurgency strategists than do others, because it exemplifies the successful use of political and social rather than military weapons against guerrillas. Credits for the success of the Philippine pacification campaign seem to go largely to a single intelligent politician, the late President Ramon Magsaysay, who became Secretary of the National Defense in 1950 at a time when the Huks appeared almost on the point of invading Manila itself. And the Huks, like the Viet Minh in Indochina, the ELAS in Greece, and the Malayan Communists, and other insurgents in the Axis-held territory throughout the world during World War II, had become into being as a patriotic force, the nationalist guerrillas opposing a foreign invader, with the blessings, political instruction, and material aid of the Allied powers, specifically of the United States. But revolutionary motivations are complex. The Huks had been fighting for something as well as against something. Wartime slogans had been taken seriously, and with the war over and the Japanese driven from the islands, social aspiration eclipsed even independence, granted conditionally in 1949 as a motivating force. The men who had been fighting the Japanese were now fighting for themselves. They demanded a political voice and a share of the land for which they had fought. Magsaysay, a former guerrilla himself, was clever enough to see what was required and influential enough to get it. Now, when he took office in 1950, the Huks, dominating central Luzon and much of Mindanao, the second largest island in the chain, commanded some 12,000 armed guerrillas and had the active cooperation of an estimated 1 million Filipinos in a nation of 17 million. An army of 30,000 soldiers was helpless to contain them. The stockpiles of weapons captured from the Japanese or supplied during the war by the United States would have been sufficient to keep the Civil War in progress for decades, and the bulk of the population, if not actively sympathetic to the insurgents, was at least passive. The terrain, mountains, and swampy jungles favored the guerrillas. The troops, hated by the villagers were confined to the larger centers of population and were seldom seen in the backcountry except on sporadic punitive expeditions, and then only in full force, an invading army arriving in trucks and armored vehicles to terrorize the rural population. Now, Magsaysay's first step was to reorganize the army and put an end to the military terrorism. Pressure against the Hucks was increased by sending out small armed units, functioning more like constabulary than troops, to hunt down the guerrillas piecemeal, while devoting most of the army to social work, setting up medical stations, building schoolhouses, repairing roads and bridges, helping the peasants get their rice to market. Now, a second step, and the first would have been useless without it, was to obtain legislation that made it possible to offer the Hucks what they had been fighting for, on the condition that they laid down their arms. And then amnesty was proclaimed, and the communist slogan, land for the landless, was subverted by an agrarian reform and resettlement program under which any guerrilla who surrendered was given a plot of his own. Clever bribery work where other inducements did not. Substantial bounties were paid for weapons. Rewards were put on the heads of key Huck leaders, and subsequent betrayals disrupted the direction of the guerrilla campaign, cutting the roving bands off from their urban base in Manila, where virtually the entire rebel political directorate was captured. Now, in 1950, troops were sent to guard the ballot boxes as an honest election, possibly the first in the Filipino history, and leading to further social reforms that progressively weakened the communist appeal. And by the time Huck leader Luis Toruk surrendered in 1954, the rural villages were firmly in the hands of the government, and the Hucks had been reduced more by defection than otherwise, to a few thousand scattered over less accessible mountains and jungle areas of the two main islands. And they had not been defeated militarily. Indeed, they had been entirely eliminated to this day, and lately they have shown signs of reviving. But they had lost the propaganda war and their popular appeal. Their cause has been stolen from them by a government far more popular, thanks in part to an economy bolstered by $620 million of American aid than any that had ruled before, unless they had been isolated slowly but surely from the support on which their successful existence depended. Now, it's a matter of speculation whether the Hucks could not have accomplished more by better exploiting their strength when they had it. Now, one of their single weaknesses seems to have been their failure to establish anything like a popular front during a period when urban support, the participation of students, industrial workers, and the poorer white-collar areas was clearly required. The insurrection was a peasant movement and remained confined to the rural areas. Now, although the guerrillas dominated the villages in 1949 and 50, they had never seriously disrupted the economy of the islands or the life of the capital. Their tactics in the field, mainly evasive, failed to produce the kind of results that could be exploited in terms of propaganda for major political effect. and once deprived of the political leadership, they seem to have lapsed into an existence hardly to be distinguished from banditry, surrendering the political as well as the military initiative to Manila. Now, military force of 12,000 guerrillas with strong support in the countryside, opposed to a relatively small army of only 30,000 men, should have been able to concentrate sufficient strength in any given place to reduce but any of the strongest garrisons or to capture any but the largest towns. Then the Hucks failed to do so. As saboteurs, they should have been able to initiate an aggressive campaign of destruction that would have crippled communications and paralyzed the national economy. A far smaller forces that have done so elsewhere, but again, the Hucks failed. Unwilling or psychologically unable to take the initiative, they failed to seize and hold the popular imagination and so to create the broad mass unrest needed to topple the government or to build a revolutionary army capable of confronting and defeating the government army. Public opinion, says Clausewitz, is ultimately gained by great victories. The Hucks needed, if not great victories, then a strong foretaste of success in order to create the bandwagon effect on which successful revolutionary movements are built. They had made a good start, but they failed to exploit it. Magsaysay's reforms came in a time to blunt the edge of the popular grievances and to broaden the political base of the regime while narrowing what the Huck movement to that point that it was virtually eliminated as a revolutionary force. Now, I see we're narrowing in here on the bottom of the hour because when we come back, we're going to talk about the post-war Manila. The situation was radically different from that of the Philippines despite certain obvious similarities because there was a strong communist guerrilla movement. And as in the Philippines, it had been schooled by experts. Indeed, Chin Peng, the Secretary General of the Malayan Communist Party, had been described during the war as Britain's most trusted guerrilla, and some 200 party members had learned irregular war. So my question is, are you going to join together with the band? Stay tuned. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back here on Liberty Tree Radio. Take heed, ladies and gentlemen. That's the question of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Are you going to join together with the band? Are you going to play Secret Squirrel for the rest of your life until they're coming after you? Then you want to get on the air and tell everybody where you are and please come and help. But nobody knows who you are and nobody knows how to get with to you so they can join together with the band. It's time to quit standing on the sidelines. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today is the 27th of August, 2018. It's a Monday, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 8:35 Arizona time. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today, and thanks for telling your friends about Liberty Tree Radio. We also want to thank Liberty Tree Radio for this broadcast and the opportunity for the soapbox to try to get the word out. I know sometimes it's hard to swallow when I tell you your firearms are your most worthless piece of equipment, that there's a lot of other things that are much more important, like clean water and clean food and a good pair of boots. But it seems to be that everybody wants to concentrate on buying guns and every attachment known to man and spending all their time down at the range poking holes in pieces of paper. But there's a lot of other stuff, and we've been covering quite a bit of that other stuff on the broadcast over on the micro effect, about the psychological operations, about trying to get the word out and reaching other people so they can, we can grow and they can join together with the band. But I've talked to so many people, and they're like, nope, I'm just a guerrilla fighter. I'm going to just sit here and polish my rifle. Or when the day comes, and I'll jump out here and take it up, then they're going to leave all the political subversions to somebody else. It doesn't work that way. That's all right. We've seen a number of failures more recently with the Bundy Ranch in Nevada and the fiasco follow-up there in Oregon. Oh, but, you know, the Bundys got some of their cows back. Oh, but all those people were found not guilty. Yeah. Yeah, but they lost a year of their life and millions of dollars in legal fees, lawyer fees, time to sitting in jail and court and everything. Yeah. I don't think that that was a very, very big victory because there was no organization and leadership and planning, intelligence preparation of the battlefield, no security communications, nothing. Let's just make it up as we go along. My email address is altabeeb762@hotmail.com, altabeeb762@hotmail.com. Time permitting, we'll get to a little bit of border news. I've been talking in the first 30 minutes about the failures of the war of the flea. As always, we dedicate this broadcast to Lily Grace Antoinette. Also, as mentioned earlier, the also run a broadcast over on the Micro Effect on Thursday and Friday. Starts at the same time, 8 a.m. Arizona time, but it runs for 2 hours each day. So the study is quite a bit more advanced than our basic instruction here on Liberty Tree Radio. But the idea is to get these into parity as to where it'll be a continuous broadcast. But as it stands right now, trying to bring the new listeners up to speed on this clarification, demystification of what insurgency is. Also, I've been wrapped up in a lot of things lately over the last month, and I know that because I had limited time on the computer that I can't always respond to quite a few emails. So if you've sent me an email and I haven't responded, please don't think that I'm ignoring you. I just, anyway, Bob Miner, we gave his telephone number out in the first 30-minute block. His mailing address is Bob Miner or Robert Miner. Last name is spelled M-I-N-E-R. And it's SCCC 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. Bob Miner, and those four initials, SCCC, is Sierra Charlie Charlie Charlie, 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. Now, Bob's got to pay about 25 cents per piece of paper to write letters or make notes. And so if you are doing poking around in the computer and have access to a printer, print him off some pertinent news items, not the forest fire in California or the volcanic eruption in Hawaii, and send them to him. It just gets his mind off of staring at the four gray walls and stressing about his family. Also, if you print it off on the front, that leaves a blank page, or even if you find a small news article that's only a paragraph long and it only takes up half of the page, then you can send those, and then Bob gets some notepaper where he can write letters or try to go through some of these recordings of the hypocrisy of what's going on with him, and then he can point down the holes and the fallacy of these claims. And so it's very important. And then also as a third benefit, because when you mail things in Bob's situation, there's got to be somebody there that goes through the mail and reads the mail. So you might also open their eyes. I'm not holding my breath, but there is that third possibility. So when we left off, let me see. I think we've covered everything. If you'd like to be part of today's broadcast, the telephone is 712-432-0900. And then the voice will come on, and you don't have to listen to the whole thing after it starts. You can enter in 957-464 and then the pound sign, and then to unmute your phone, you can press star 6. You can also listen in on libertytreeradio.4mg.com. Now, when we left off in the first 30 minutes of today's broadcast, we were talking about the failures in the war of the flea. Talked about how Magsaysay was also a guerrilla fighter fighting the Japanese, just like the Hucks were. But why was one successful and one wasn't? I always find it interesting when to do the study, whether it has to do with Malaya, the Philippines, Vietnam, French Indochina, how some turned out successful and some didn't. And there are similarities in the geography, oceans, or the South China Sea, or things like that. Beaches, mountains, jungles, swamps, and the willingness of the people to throw out a foreign invader. So why were the Viet Minh successful in French Indochina and the Hucks weren't? And, you know, I know that there's a lot of other aspects of it, the language, certain dates that were significant in their histories and parts and pieces of about that. But in post-war Malaya, the situation was radically different because from that of the Philippines, and despite certain obvious similarities, well, number one, that there was a strong communist guerrilla movement, and as in the Philippines, it had been schooled by experts. Indeed, Chin Pen, the Secretary General of the Malayan Communist Party, had been described during the war as Britain's most trusted guerrilla. and some 200 party members had learned irregular warfare a few years earlier in the British Army Special Training School in Singapore. And in addition, there was an extensive political organization, the Mimien, or Masses Movement, reaching into virtually every town and village of any consequence on the Malayan Peninsula. Unfortunately for the communists, the so-called Malayan Races Liberation Army, the MRLA, had very few Malayans in it, being composed almost exclusively of Chinese, and more particularly of a large squatter population of recent communist or Chinese immigrants with no deep roots in the country. Kind of reminds me of what's going on here in the United States with the illegal aliens, squatters. Now, the guerrillas, with the total strength variously estimated at 5,000 to 10,000, were able to launch a campaign of terror and sabotage that was initially effective. But their weakness in the long run lay in the comparative ease with which they could be isolated. The jungle in which they necessarily found refuge was inhabited not by farmers, but by tribal aborigines, scarcely able to grow enough food to support themselves, and consequently the food on which the guerrillas relied had to be smuggled from the villages through the Min Yin network, and this was soon halted by the vigilant police activity. And a massive and costly resettlement program removed more than 500,000 Chinese squatters, mostly tin mines and rubber plantation workers, from their shacks on the fringe of the jungle to the protected villages, where they could be kept under surveillance and at the same time offered advantages that tended to woo them from their political connection with the insurgents. Now, the latter cut off from contact with the masses of the population, lacking the material support of even the Chinese community on which they had relied, were then slowly starved into submission or turned into ambushes in which they were reduced piecemeal. Now, the resettlement program, the prototype of the protected villages experiment in South Vietnam, in some interest to counterinsurgency specialists. Now, as are some of the methods developed by the British to combat the Chinese guerrillas in the Malayan jungle. What is of principal interest in the Malayan experience, however, is not the defeat of the MRLA, a foredoomed effort in any event, but the duration of the suppression campaign and the extremely high cost. Despite the obvious handicaps under which they fought, the Chinese communist guerrillas in Malaya still had not been eliminated as a fighting force a full 10 years after the struggle began. Indeed, a few hundred guerrillas still survive in the jungle, although they are no longer considered dangerous. Now, during the 10 years they fought, they tied up British forces 140,000 strong, including 40,000 regular troops and about 100,000 regular and auxiliary police. The expense of the military effort can be judged by the following detailed account of the Operation Nassau, described as typical of battalion-sized British counter-guerrilla operations in Malaya. Quote, Operation Nassau began in December 1954 and ended in September 1955. The South Swamp of Kuala Langat covers an area of over 100 square miles. It is dense jungle with trees up to 150 feet tall where visibility is limited to about 30 yards. After several assassinations, a British battalion was assigned to the area. Food control was achieved through a system of rationing, convoys, gate checks, and searches. One company began operations in the swamp about December 21, 1954. On January 9, 1955, full-scale tactical operations began. Artillery, mortars, and aircraft began harassing fires in South Swamp. Originally, the plan was to bomb and shell the swamp day and night so that the terrorists would be driven out into ambushes, but the terrorists were well prepared to stay indefinitely. Food parties came out occasionally, but the civil population was too afraid to report them. Plans were modified. Harassing fires were reduced to nighttime only. Ambushes continued, and patrolling inside the swamp was intensified. Operations of this nature continued for 3 months without result. Finally, on March 21, an ambush party, after 35 hours of waiting, succeeded in killing 2 of 8 terrorists. The first 2 red pins, signifying kills, appeared on the operation map, and local morale rose a little. Another month passed before it was learned that terrorists were making a contact inside the swamp. One platoon established an ambush. One terrorist appeared and was killed. May passed without a contact. In June, a chance meeting by a patrol accounted for 1 killed and 1 captured. A few days later, after 4 fruitless days of patrolling, 1 platoon en route to camp accounted for 2 more terrorists. The number 3 terrorist in the area surrendered and reported that food control was so effective that 1 terrorist had been murdered in a quarrel over food. On July 7, 2 additional companies were assigned to the area. Patrolling and harassing fires were intensified. 3 terrorists surrendered, and 1 of them led a platoon patrol to the terrorist leader's camp. The patrol attacked the camp, killing 4, including the leader. Other patrols accounted for 4 more, and by the end of July, 23 terrorists remained in the swamp with no food or communications with the outside world. This was the nature of the operation. 60,000 artillery shells, 30,000 rounds of mortar ammunition, and 2,000 aircraft bombs for 35 terrorists killed or captured. Each one represented 1,500 man days of patrolling or waiting in ambush. NASA was considered a success, for the end of the emergency was 1 step nearer. 9 months of continuous effort by an entire battalion, backed by artillery and aircraft, with the expenditure of more artillery and mortar shells and aerial bombs than existed in the arsenal of some Latin American republics to eliminate 35 guerrillas. At such a cost, the defeat of the Chinese communists in Malaya can be nothing less than inspirational to potential guerrillas of others, less sternly guarded countries. How much of the shaky Latin American regimes could meet the expense, let alone the political risk, of such a campaign if it involved not 35 but 1,000 determined guerrillas? For how long? The British exchequer could, one supposed, conveniently stand the strain. Even so, there was more to the reckoning than the military payroll and the spectacular expenditure of ammunition. Undoubtedly, the long-drawn MRLA insurrection, rootless and essentially hopeless as it was, hastened the independence of Malaya by some years. Now, we come to Greece, a case history of another sort. The 3-year Greek Revolution, successfully put down by a rightist government with the help of Britain and the United States, offers instruction to those interested in knowing how not to conduct a guerrilla war. In Greece, in 1946 to 1949, virtually all the lessons of experience were ignored. All of the rules laid down by the Marxist-Leninist theoreticians of revolutionary warfare were broken by the very communists who might have been expected to adhere most closely to them. As other areas, the conclusion of World War II in Greece left the communist leaders in an advantageous position, materially and politically. Communism and anti-fascism were closely identified because it was the communists who had dominated the ELAS resistance movement. Thus, the party held a strong ideological position. Thousands of ELAS veterans were at the disposal of the revolutionary movement. And although the ELAS had made a token surrender of its weapons in 1945, the best of the arms supplied to the resistance groups by Britain and the Americans during the war remained in the hands of the guerrilla when civil war broke out in 1946. Although the communist guerrillas were numerically weak, with perhaps 2,500 fighting men in 1946, as opposed to the National Gendarmerie of 30,000, a good start was made, and recruits to the communist cause poured in. And the fighting began in the northern mountains along Greece's common border with Albania, Yugoslavia, and Bulgaria. Soon spread to the south-central Greece, and then into the mountains of Peloponnesus. I'm sure I butchered that one, and the reprisals were taken by extreme right-wing groups added fuel to the flame, spreading the conflict. And the communist campaign was initiated along theoretically sound lines. The Democratic Army fought in guerrilla fashion in small units capable of dispersing and hiding or even mingling with the civil population when in trouble, yet able to concentrate locally superior forces swiftly for attacks on village police posts and small patrols. Now, as the guerrillas grew stronger, the police were forced to abandon the smaller posts and to withdraw for safety into the larger towns. The Athens government, seeing the danger, hastily began to rebuild the army, which had been reduced to virtually nothing during the German occupation. And the troops sent into the mountains to subdue the guerrillas encountered the same tactics. They were unable to hold small patrols, unable to move freely except in considerable strength. Worse still, they were unable to maintain sufficient forces along the northern borders to prevent the passage of men and supply trains from Albania and Yugoslavia, where some 4,000 ELAS veterans had gone when the German occupation had ended. Thus, the Democratic Army could depend on an inviolate rear area across the border in which to establish hospitals, training camps, and supply bases, and the supplies moving into Greece by two main routes, one directly from Yugoslavia, the other from Yugoslavia to Albania, and then southward. Now, I see we're coming up on the top of the hour and the end of today's broadcast. So I'd like to say thank you for taking the time to tune in today. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. As always, we dedicate this broadcast to Lily Grace Antoinette. Also, we're also broadcast over on the Micro Effect on Thursday and Friday, starting at the same time, 8 a.m. Arizona time, but for 2 hours on Thursday and 2 hours on Friday. So I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Now we're starting to see how there's a little bit more to this insurgency part than just having a rifle. And we start to see that it's more political than military. And the big question is of why some have been successful and others have been dismal failures. We're also seeing a similarity with what happened in Malaya with the squatters and the illegal people coming into the country that have no real connection compared to the sanctuary cities and the illegal aliens coming into this country. I see quite a few similarities of what's going on. I don't think we have time to get through some of our border news today, but I would like to say thanks for taking the time to tune in. Thank you to Liberty Tree Radio for granting us this opportunity to try to hope in your eyes to see that there's a little bit more to this than just a rifle and a lot of magazines and a big pile of bullets and every attachment known to man. I'm not saying that those aren't important, not any more important than the jack in your car comes when you have a flat tire. But most of the time it just rests there in its compartment, and you hope that you don't have to use it, but sometimes you do. Well, got the end of the broadcast today. Thanks for taking the time to tune in. We'll see you on Thursday over on the Micro Effect. Rest in peace, John McCain.
Have white skin, got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire sky. A well-dressed man waiting on the last plane. Standing in the gallows with my head in the news. Any minute now, I'm expecting all hell to break loose. Crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. This place ain't doing me any good. Wrong town, should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool in here thinks he's got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge. Lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen. I'm only passing through.